Welcome to the Decatur City Church Podcast. On Sunday, we wrapped up our latest series, How Are You Doing? Really? But we still have a little more bonus content for you this week as we dive a little deeper. Today, we have an extended interview with licensed psychologist Dr. Wendy Dickinson. Sharita's conversation with Wendy was so helpful, and there was even more practical advice that we didn't have time for in the service. So we hope you enjoy hearing a little more from Wendy and Sharita.
I'm here with Dr. Wendy Dickinson. She's a licensed psychologist and founder and CEO of Grow Counseling in Atlanta. Wendy, we are so happy to have you here with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. I want to ask you a couple of questions, but the first question I want to ask is, what have you seen or heard or experienced from a lot of your clients when it comes to mental health challenges that are very unique to the season that we're in right now?
Yeah, I think we're experiencing a lot of unique things right now, and people are overwhelmed, they're stressed out. A lot of people are really at a breaking point. And I think that there are two specifically unique things that we're facing. One is a sense of collective grief. So if you think about all the grief and the loss that we've experienced in the last few months, you know, I think about students who ended the year in a way that they didn't expect. And there was a lot of loss. And then over the summer, they didn't get to do the things they would normally do. And now here we're starting back the school year. And they're feeling a sense of
different.
Loss.
Yeah.
People have lost jobs. Parents are feeling disconnected from their communities. So there's a lot going on in terms of grief. I don't think that everybody's labeling it that way, but that really is a feeling that people are having. And usually when people experience grief, people in their community, their friends, their family, they're able to rally and help support them. And so they take on part of the grief and hold it for that person who's experiencing the grief. But right now, our grief buckets are all full. We all have more than we can handle, or just as much as we can handle. And so we don't have the ability to really take on and hold other people's grief. We're kind of just passing it around from one person to the next. So that creates a real challenge. The second thing is that people are experiencing enormous levels of stress, right? And I don't think that people really recognize how destructive stress can be.
Yes.
The American Medical Association has identified that stress is a factor in more than 75% of physical illnesses that we face. So it's not just a mental health issue. It's a physical health issue, too. I talk to clients about a simple scale, green, yellow, red, right? So green's a day at the beach, red's like super stressed out, crisis mode.
Okay.
Most Americans live in yellow or maybe high yellow or orange, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like already. It doesn't take much to shift them into
red.
Yeah. Three things that we know increase a stressor is when it's unpredictable, unknown, and doesn't have an end point.
I need you to say that again.
It's unpredictable, unknown, it doesn't have an end point. It describes exactly what
Where
we've been facing for so long.
Yeah.
One of the things that we know is that stress over time can become a crisis, and crisis over time becomes a trauma. So when we live in this high stress mode for so long, there are really powerful ramifications to it. And we start to see people unwind. We start to see people deal with hopelessness, depression, anxiety, fear, despair.
I was going to say despair, death. There's been so many people that have, like you said, had committed suicide and different things because of the stress. And it's just, like you said, we've never experienced it before.
It's so hard.
So it's just...
Yeah, we have to rewind pretty far back in our collective history, probably to like a world war, to identify a time when every single person, every community, every family, every friend group has been impacted by something.
At the same time.
In some way at the same time.
Right. I think going off of what you said earlier, That I never would have thought about it, the fact that we've never experienced anything since something like World War II or World War I, where everybody around the globe is feeling the exact same thing. And usually it's easier to carry, like you said, your friend's burden when everything in your life is okay.
You have some space.
Right, because you can process it. But then to have to deal with everybody's dealing with the same thing at the same time. Mm-hmm. I barely have space for me and my family. So when you come to me, it's like, how do I carry your weight and my weight as well.
Yeah. And what I've seen from that is people kind of self-isolating, even aside from quarantine and trying to stay safe physically. I think people have really emotionally kind of gone into a hole because it feels like if I connect, if I reach out and say, how are you doing? I don't know if I can handle or hold what you have to share.
Yeah.
So it's an isolation over time leads to trauma. Mm. We know that relational connection insulates us from the negative effects of trauma, but isolation can actually lead to trauma. So it just intensifies this experience that we're having.
That actually gets me or segues me into the next question, which is just dealing more with, you know, because we've been experiencing so much in this pandemic all at one time, the levels of stress that we've come into are something that we wouldn't normally deal with, right? I know for me personally, the first first two or three days that everything got announced of, okay, we're going to shut down, it's going to be closed, I have my own business, and I lost every single job, every single one. Yeah. So all of a sudden, I was normally used to kind of like, okay, we're going to work this out as a freelancer. You know, I got a little couple weeks in between. Now I have no time. Mm-hmm. Now I have no money. Now I have no prospects. And that the weight of that all of a sudden is much heavier than before. For all of the people who are experiencing things due to job loss, due to, you know, losing loved ones, the despair deaths, all of those things, what do you say that's practical? Because we've been talking a lot the last couple weeks in the series, I would say more on an abstract level, like, hey, be honest with yourself, be honest with God, be honest with others. But how do you practically stay away from the isolation that would lead to trauma?
What can you
right,
do?
Right. Like, what do you actually do? Or some small things I can do at home that I don't know if they fall in line with self-care or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things I've found myself saying a lot to clients is under this umbrella of being gentle with yourself is just, this is hard because it's hard. Mm-hmm. This is hard because it's hard. It's not hard because you're broken or because you're not enough or because you have mental health issues. Mm. This is just hard. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, as a real practical starting point, we need to give ourselves permission to recognize that what we are walking through and carrying is extremely hard.
Yeah.
From a practical perspective, I'd break it into three areas. So mind, body, spirit, right?
Say that one more time.
Mind, body, spirit, right? Let's start with spirit.
Yeah.
We are hardwired for connection. Mm. We are hardwired for relationships with God, with people. And all of that has been kind of dismantled, the way that we connect with people. Yeah. And so I would say make it a priority. We're going to have to be creative. It's going to be different. It's not going to feel normal. Mm. But we've got to find ways to stay connected to combat that isolation that we were talking about. So I would say make relationships, stay connected, make it a priority.
So like FaceTime calls or
whatever it takes. Stand in your yard and yell at your neighbor. You
right.
know, whatever.
Not angrily.
No, not nicely.
Okay, yeah.
So that spirit, with your mind, it's really important what you focus on.
Yes.
I always say to clients, what you focus on grows.
Yeah.
So this idea that we're going to find what we're looking for. If we're looking for the stressors out there, we're going to notice those more.
Yes, ma'am.
If we're looking for the helpers, if we're looking for the resources, if we're looking for the support, we're going to be more focused on that.
Yeah.
Now, that's not to say stick your head in the sand.
Right.
But I like to think of it in terms of plan for the future, but live in the present, right? Plan for the future, live in the present. Stay grounded.
Yeah.
Because most of us, if we answer the question, are you all right now, right this moment, are you okay?
Yeah.
Most of us, most of the time, would be able to answer yes, right? Mm-hmm. Now, the future's going to hold what it does, and we need to plan for that, but we don't need to live in that. That's where...
That's where the fear comes, and worry exists.
Right. So stay grounded in the present. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. The research shows that the brain actually doesn't know the difference between what's real and what's imagined. Mm. So what that means is that, you know, you're asleep at night, you're having a dream, someone's chasing you,
and you
wake up and the covers are all a wreck and you're all sweating.
Right.
Is it just me? Maybe it's just me.
No, it's not you. The first couple weeks of COVID, I was like, I got COVID. I got a fever. I have COVID. And it was just the heat was on because it was cold.
Your body is biochemically responding as if it's actually happening.
Yeah.
Because your brain doesn't actually know the difference between what's real and what's imagined. Mm. So when we spend a lot of time in the future imagining the worst case scenario, catastrophizing, how things could go wrong, that's what our body is going to respond to, and it's going to put our body under a lot of stress. Mm-hmm. So you plan for the future, but stay grounded in the present and focus on the positive things.
Yeah, that
Who's
reminds
there
me
to support you?
Not to cut you off. Reminds me of the scripture where it says, and I can't tell you exactly where it is right now, but just the fact that, like, fix your eyes. I think it's in Hebrews. It says, fix your eyes on Jesus.
Right.
And a lot of times in church, it's easy to just kind of say that and you skip past it.
Like, why?
But,
why
do
really
I have to focus? But you saying that, that brought me back. Because if I'm not focusing on the news every day, if I'm not focusing on, you know, like you said, the imaginary, or the things that I'm imagining could happen, if I'm focusing on him, I'm focusing on truth.
Yeah.
And then that can ground me. And even if I'm not necessarily, you know, with people that aren't followers of Christ, still to be able to not focus on the news every day, all day long, that at least gives you, like you said, grace and space to plan for the future, but still be present and not live in that anxiety and that tension and that fear.
Yeah. And that's a really good segue into the body piece. So we have talked about the spirit, we talked about the mind, the body part. I would say let's get real practical on everyday routines. Sleep deprivation is a form of torture, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the first things I assess with people is how are you sleeping? Because everything is going to be built off of that.
Okay, so how do you sleep? Because I struggle. I mean, honestly, the last couple of months, like, they've been, because I didn't have a routine. Mm-hmm. I think I did the good the first 2 weeks because it was like, this will be over. Two, 3 weeks, we'll be done, be back to life, right? And then month three, I was like, Jesus. And I just haven't, had the best, you know, sleep pattern. So for someone who might be watching, who is struggling with insomnia, or they already had problems sleeping and now, like you said, they don't, how do you, how does routine play into that?
So routine is really important. I would do a quick search online for sleep hygiene. There are a lot of tips and tricks out there, but a lot of it is about being really intentional, very mindful, staying in a routine so that your body knows when it's time to go to sleep. For people who struggle long-term with sleep, they may need to talk to somebody, a therapist or a doctor, to help with that. But that's one of those key building blocks that we have to figure out with people first, because everything else is going to kind of come toppling down if sleep isn't in the picture. Mm-hmm. So sleep exercise is my go-to number one thing with clients. Don't worry. You don't have to run a sprint
marathon.
Like,
I can just walk. Can I just walk around the block?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Yes, you can.
Because I am not the one that's going to get up. I'll eat the kale, but I'm not about to run for forever.
All you have to do is get your heart rate up. If you get your heart rate up for 30 minutes a day, so outside walking in Atlanta, we got great hills to walk on. It's the research shows that it's equivalent to a low dose of antidepressants for most people. So it's a real practical thing that we can do that boosts our serotonin, it boosts our neurotransmitters, kind of helps to re-regulate and get everything back in line. Now, some people may still need an additional boost, and that's where we would recommend they see a psychiatrist or their doctor. But start with the exercise and see what it does to help. For a lot of people, it just gets that momentum going. And then I would say nutrition. You mentioned the kale.
Yes.
When we're out of routine, we're off track, there's a tendency to comfort eat.
Yes.
Comfort drink. And we need to be really mindful about what we're putting in our bodies. So if we can get some of those basic things in place, it helps set us up to handle stressors.
Yeah.
The other thing I would say is look around your environment. What can you change in your environment that might help you kind of just take a deep breath? You mentioned self-care earlier.
Yes.
These are the kind of things that I would put in this category.
Can you define that, though? Because I have a group of girls, and I hope they don't get mad with me. They are my just grad girls, and some of them love to throw up the word, oh, I can't meet today because self-care. And I'm like, I'm sorry, ma'am. Self-care is not, you just get to throw up a red flag. This is not, a scrimmage game. Self-care, but what does that actually mean or look like, when you're
That's
talking about it?
I think if we go back to our buckets, self-care are the things that help take some of those big rocks out of our bucket. So they can be small things, take a bath, light a candle, the things that kind of help you feel nourished and filled up. They can also be behaviors. So it may be that you're saying no more intentionally to somebody or an activity. It may be that you're taking more time setting aside to be quiet or to create some space. It could be things in your environment. A lot of people are really sensitive to light or to smell or to temperature. And so regulating some of those things may help you to have more space in your bucket so you can take on other things.
More things. Mm-hmm. I will say, I don't know if you've ever heard of this. There's a, in Danish culture, this thing called hygge. It's spelled H-Y-G-G-E. Looks like hygge.
Okay.
But it's hygge. And I just like saying that word. But it's the idea that you curate calm. You curate space in your home. And it is everything. Yeah. Like, you, I don't know if you, I'm sure you've been in IKEA.
Yes.
And you see those little random looking lamps. But they actually build those specifically to create a specific type of light and aura from the lamp.
So interesting.
So that it feels very comfort giving. Mm-hmm. They talk about like drinking tea or coffee. It's not mm-hmm. necessarily what you drink, but it's like the warmth of that.
And the ritual of
knowing the habit. Yeah. So that's what comes to mind for me that I kind of picked up that's practical. Mm-hmm. I feel better knowing that there is research behind that.
There is.
But yeah, so that's cool. That actually also leads me into the next question, which is just more for people who, you said it a little bit earlier, there are some people who have a bigger issue than just kind of mm-hmm. self-care mm-hmm. routine. They're to the point where they are at the despair, mm-hmm. Death, or just having a really hard time getting out of bed in the morning, mm-hmm. not wanting to talk to anybody. Not being able to reach out. I know that I shared that my son had passed away, and mm-hmm. I went through a lot of grief. Yeah. And people asked me at different times, like, oh, hey, so how come you didn't call me or just reach out? And I'm like, you don't understand. Mm-hmm. I can't, like,
think in the morning.
Right. Like, I can't call you. I'm not even thinking about you. It's enough to get out of the bed. Just to go get something to eat mm-hmm. or to get out of bed, to go downstairs and get a drink. You know, yeah. I don't have the capacity to be able to call somebody.
Yeah.
So what do you say to those people who need something very practical, or what would be a practical next step for them mm-hmm. If they're in that dark, kind of heavy place?
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I hope comes from this conversation and other conversations that I know are happening right now mm. is just to be able to normalize the process of counseling. Mm. You don't have to be crazy to go to counseling, right? Like I say, the most healthy people, I think, are the ones who've reached out for help, right?
Yeah.
And so I like to think of it as a process that we would give each other in a perfect world. If we had all the things to give each other, mm-hmm. we would show up for each other like great counselors. You know, we would be empathic. We would lean in. We'd be able to hold other people's things. We'd come in wisdom.
Yeah.
We wouldn't be clouded by our own stuff. Mm-hmm. But we don't live in a perfect world. And what therapists have learned how to do is to set our things aside for the moment. Mm. And to show up 100%, mm-hmm. at least 90%.
I was going to say, because you go to school for that.
Yeah.
To be able to do it. It's not easy, like you said, to be able to, me not having the background, the knowledge, the understanding, the wisdom.
It's a practice.
Yeah.
You know? And so when we're able to show up with somebody like that, mm-hmm. that is healing in and of itself. Mm-hmm. But then there are specific tools and strategies and ways that we can equip people to walk through whatever it is that they're dealing with. Mm-hmm. And so I think part of that is naming for them what's going on. Mm. I believe really strongly when we name something, we take some of the power away from it. Mm. So when we don't know what's going on, it feels big. It's like a monster that's looming.
Yeah.
But when we can say, hey, I understand this. It's not easy, but I understand what's going on, and I understand there's a way through this. Mm. And on the other side, I'm going to be better when I can move through it.
That, mm-hmm. And when you say naming it, do you mm-hmm. mean, like, I need to take ownership of that, or is that someone coming alongside me and naming it, or is it both?
It could be both.
Yeah.
It could be both. You know, sometimes I think when we're so in the middle of something, we can't see what's going on. Mm-hmm. You know, we go back to the grief. Mm-hmm. I know we were talking earlier and you had said, well, I would have never put the label grief on what we're experiencing.
Yeah.
But that resonates.
Yeah.
And I think when somebody can say, hey, you know, I see this from a slightly different perspective. I've got a little objectivity here, mm-hmm. and let me tell you about my experience with these kinds of things.
Yeah.
And let me tell you about what I'm seeing with you.
Yeah.
It helps us to be able to put words around something mm-hmm. that feels overwhelming, especially when we don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I would agree. Until I had a friend who stepped in and was like, hey, you know, I think that you're grieving. And then when I finally did go to a grief counselor, mm-hmm. my therapist, she was the one who named for me that I have been grieving for like 4 years. Mm-hmm. There have been a series of things. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times we think grief, we just associate it with death. I did. Mm-hmm. And she was able to help me see that it wasn't just, okay, I lost my son, mm-hmm. or I lost my friend 3 months before that. Mm-hmm. It was, you lost all of these people, yeah. but then you also lost your family overseas. When I moved back from Dubai back home, I had lost opportunities. Mm-hmm. I lost friendships with people. Mm-hmm. Like all, there were so many different things that were lost, yeah. And not lost that all came because I didn't intend for it. Mm-hmm. You know, some things were intentional. Mm-hmm. So I can only imagine for someone who, with all the pandemic stuff, this was not intentional.
Yeah.
I did not decide I want to leave my job, you know, or for my parent or my friend or whoever in my family to die because of COVID or whatever the circumstance was. Even the loss of not being able to go to a memorial, yeah. or a funeral, or
we've
the
lost
things.
Lost a sense of normal, right?
Right. So I think that mm-hmm. naming, like you said, helps mm-hmm. to then say, oh, well, it's okay for me to seek help. Mm-hmm. Because it's not like, I'm not crazy. Yeah. That's right. The stigma that I know a lot of people, I thought,
right.
I'm not going to the therapist. I'm fine. I'm good.
Yeah, I think I've seen a shift in that maybe over the last 10 years or so, mm-hmm. where people are talking more about counseling and it feels mm-hmm. less stigmatized, mm-hmm. but there still is that piece of it.
Yeah.
I think especially in terms of what's modeled for us in our communities and in our families.
Yeah.
If people aren't talking about, hey, counseling is an option and it's helpful and
yes.
it's normal
yes.
and we can help you find somebody,
yeah.
then in the middle of something hard, we're probably not going to have it in ourselves
yep.
to reach out and find somebody in those
right.
moments.
Because it's like a muscle.
Yeah.
You got to work it.
Right.
Yeah. Even if it's not your muscle,
yes.
people around you
yeah.
need to be the muscle to kind of help you move in that direction. I know that you work with men. Specifically a lot, you kind of have a focus mm-hmm. there. And you and I were talking a little bit earlier, and I told you that I felt, as a woman of color, it was somewhat hard for me to reach out or even think about reaching out to a mental health personnel, because that's not something talked about in my community, really. It's kind of like, you should get through it. And I know that there are many factors that kind of play into that. But specifically for someone who is not familiar with mental health, with the necessity of a mental health professional in their life, or that it's okay to not be okay. What do you say to those people? Like, how do you get them to reach out? Like, what would you want to tell someone if they were watching? And I know I said men, persons of color, but all people.
Yeah. Well, I think, first of all, it's brave to reach out. And
yeah.
and we have to acknowledge that when we do things that require bravery, it mm. also can be very scary at the mm-hmm. same time, right? So I always, when I schedule an appointment with somebody for the first time, I always acknowledge this is a really brave thing for you to reach out. So
yeah.
I would say start by asking your friends. I suspect that more of our friends go to counseling than you imagine.
We know.
Yes, it's
yeah.
just not something that people always talk about
yeah.
in conversation.
Yeah.
But I think if you were to start floating out and say, hey, you know, I'm thinking about counseling. Mm-hmm. You know, do you know anybody? Do you know anybody that goes to counseling?
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's a level of vulnerability that might come pretty quickly to the surface.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's one thing is ask for help, ask for some referrals. I do think there's some barriers around, you know, finances,
yes.
finding somebody,
yes.
knowing how to connect,
yeah.
wondering what the process would be like.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in the middle of something hard, all of those things just seem harder.
Yes.
So I love what you said a minute ago about it being a muscle that you have to kind of flex.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's a great time to seek out a professional before you're in that crisis or the trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're feeling stressed, but you still have some bandwidth,
mm-hmm.
that's a great time to reach out to somebody. And maybe you don't go for a long time,
yeah.
but you establish a relationship
yeah.
and you figure out what the process is like. It's not nearly as scary as people think that it
no,
would be.
No.
It's super helpful.
Yes.
Usually at the end of the first session, people are like, why haven't I been here sooner?
I felt that way. And I went in with the mindset of, do I lay on the couch? Do I sit up? Because television,
you can do
movies.
Whatever you want.
Yes, she said the same thing.
Yeah.
She's like, you can
yeah,
do whatever you want
okay.
to do. But when we finished that first session, I had gotten so much off. And she also reminded me that it wasn't just, hey, this is once and done. Like, this is a journey.
Yeah.
It's a process. And it may have felt, I feel like our time was super short. I was there for 80 minutes. And I'm like, girl, it's only 15 minutes. We don't have any more time. I got more stuff to say. And it was much easier once we started. And now there are things that she's taught me, you know, in our time together that I'm able to use so I don't get to red as quick, as well as to encourage other people. But I never would have gone if someone else encouraged me to go.
Yeah.
Just a few more questions. For those of us who have a friend or a family member who is in that place of, like, they're either yellow or they're already all the way to red, they may not realize it, but, you know, how do we support them? Especially, I feel like it's hard to tell someone, hey, you're depressed, you need to go see somebody. And it's hard to receive that from people if you do have the thought of, oh, this is a stigma or I'm not crazy or whatever. What are some practical ways that as a community we can lean in to help those that we love the most?
That's a great question because I think that we spend a lot of time trying to appear okay, you know? And so when you see somebody struggling, they're probably already in orange or red.
Yeah.
Even if they're looking like they're yellow on the surface, you know? And so I would say lean in, you know, ask the question and then ask it again. You know, ask the question and then say, no, but really, how are you really doing? Most of the time, people are relieved to have somebody really ask that question. They worry that they'll burden somebody by telling them, you know, how they're really feeling. And so they skim over the surface, right? But when you lean in, you say, yeah, no, but how are you really doing? Most of the time, they're relieved to be able to talk about it.
Yeah.
And I would say just listen. You know, a lot of times we need, back to our buckets, we need somebody to hold our story.
Yeah.
We need somebody to just listen without trying to fix the problem.
Can you please say that one more time?
Without trying to fix
without
the problem.
I can't tell you how many people, for all the things that happened with my son, oh, well, you just need to do. Oh, wait, and I'm like, I'm actually talking to you, and you don't have a solution.
Yeah.
I don't have like a physical thing that I can do. Like you said, you're not the counselor.
That's a phrase that I feel like we would be all better off if we could ban from our vocabulary. Well, you just need to.
Ma'am, please. So yeah, I mean, I think that as you're saying,
so listen
listening.
Openly, you know, try to, back to what we were talking about before, maybe try to help them name some of the feelings that they're having. Because when you're in the midst of something and it, you know, you may be able to identify, you feel, you know, cloudy and just kind of
overwhelmed
and you don't know how you're feeling a lot of times. So somebody be able to say, hey, you sound really sad or that's really hard. You sound like you're struggling.
Yeah.
Starts to kind of create some awareness so that then when you do come back and say, I don't know if this would be helpful, but I really want to tell you about my experience with counseling.
Yeah.
I think it could be helpful for you.
Yes.
How can I help you with that?
How can I help?
Yes.
I think.
Ask the question.
Yeah.
How can I help?
Yeah. No, that's good. You should talk to some people that were in my life. we've been talking the last few weeks about how we've all gotten really good with answering the question, how are you? And we answer like, oh, I'm fine, like you said, or I'm great. And we're not really that great. But the least that we need to do is ask ourselves, personally, how are you doing really, right? What's the power of actually asking ourselves that question? Because it's different when somebody else, like you said, prompts you, brings that up. But what is the power, like what unlocks do you think when we actually can be honest with ourselves enough to say, I'm not okay?
Yeah. So what ultimately unlocks is healing. That's the long-term goal, right?
Yeah.
So that we are not bogged down and living with a backpack full of rocks all the time, you know? That we can throw that backpack off and live in freedom and health and wholeness.
Yeah.
The path to healing, hold on with this. The path to healing is through the feelings. So we've...
Nobody, I mean, you are a therapist, so that's why you sound like my therapist, because you say that all the time.
Nobody likes to hear that.
No.
But, you know, I think that we worry we'll be overwhelmed or consumed with the feelings if we acknowledge them. And so we kind of just find a lot of ways to numb out or to try to go around it.
Yeah.
And I think about the 23rd Psalm. So you're walking through the valley of the shadow of death, right? And there's even this image of kind of a festive table on the other side.
Yeah.
I think about like, you know, the farm table with the string lights and the whole thing,
very nice.
Right? Table set.
Yes, thank you, Joanna.
Right? So we're moving through this valley. It doesn't work to go around a valley.
No.
It's almost impossible to go around a valley. You have to go through it. But I always say to my clients, we're not camping out. We're not pitching a tent. Mm-hmm. We're not calling the valley home, right? We're moving through it. Mm-hmm. We're moving through it to help on the other side. Mm-hmm. And so I think the biggest piece of this is acknowledging the feeling so that you can start to create some kind of strategic plan to get to the other side.
Yeah. I think when you said that about the valley of the shadow of death, I went with my family last September. We went to Arizona. And I don't know, that verse was just kind of in my head. Mm-hmm. And as we drove through the mountains, we were driving up to Flagstaff to go to Grand Canyon, we were going through a lot of valleys.
Yeah.
And for the first time, I recognized what that actually looks like, because the shadow of that mountain was so big.
Yeah.
Until we got through the actual valley, and then it was very small. Because, you know, the sun is shifting where the shadow lands.
Yeah,
and I just thought, wow, God, when you say the shadow, right? But we think that, but then also there's the verse that says, under the shadow of the Almighty.
So great.
And his shadow is so much bigger. And when you're going through darkness, it's hard to see light. Mm-hmm. But I told a friend of mine once, I had kind of been processing with my therapist and whatnot, that in order for you to have light, in order for there to be a shadow, right? You got to go through darkness. There has to be some, like, they have to exist simultaneously.
Yeah,
you don't have, you don't need light if you don't have darkness. Mm-hmm. And you can't get around that. So I think that's beautiful that you brought that up, but also that you mentioned a strategic plan.
Yeah.
For people that might be listening and they're like, well, what's the strategy? I know everybody's strategy is different. Mm-hmm. Do you have just like, other than, I know we talked about maybe it's just reviewing the things that you already said, but do you have a plan or some strategic steps that people could take if they are ready? They've acknowledged, okay, I got a problem somewhat. Okay, I'm willing to go try.
Yeah.
Like, what would you say would kind of be?
So really practically, I would say, think about who you know that might have a therapist. Mm-hmm. If you don't know anybody or don't feel comfortable asking, reach out to an organization you trust. I know you guys make a ton of referrals.
Right.
We're on your referral network. We love working with Decatur City people.
Yeah.
The next step, if you don't feel comfortable with that, is there are a ton of resources online. Mm-hmm. So you can go online. Most therapists these days have a website, mm-hmm. and you can read a lot about them. You kind of get a feel for who they are, what their style is. Mm-hmm. And I would say reach out. We have a list of questions on our website that you can ask a therapist as you're trying to get to know somebody.
Okay.
And most therapists will do a quick interview, kind of 15-minute conversation. Free, just to see if it's a good fit.
Okay.
So you get a sense of who they are before you actually walk into the office.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, by the time you hear somebody's voice, you've talked to them a very little bit about your problem mm-hmm. or your concern, it kind of opens up that door for the connection, and mm-hmm. it doesn't feel quite so scary to schedule the appointment mm-hmm. to go into the office.
Mm-hmm.
Any great therapist will spend a lot of time listening to you before they jump right into, here's what we're going to do, right?
Yeah.
Because it's important to really understand fully, what are you dealing with?
Mm-hmm.
What are you going through? What are your strengths? What are your challenges? What resources do you have that you can draw on?
Mm-hmm.
And not to overwhelm somebody with 100 handouts and 10 books and, 14 podcasts to listen to, you need a next step.
Yeah.
You don't need 10 steps.
No.
Most of the time, you just need the next
one.
Step.
Yeah. No, that's good. I don't know. Is there anything else that that just is kind of like burning on your heart? Like, hey, I would want anyone to know wherever they are, whether they're in that yellow space, the orange, the red, or even in the green, because I know you said reaching out before mm-hmm. you get to those mm-hmm. places. Like, what would be your advice or something that you would want people watching right now to know when it comes to that?
You know, I would love for one of the bright spots from this season,
mm-hmm.
I would love for one of the bright things to come from this is that we are all a little more vulnerable about talking about what we need, right? Like, instead of having these walls and this armor up, I'm great, I've got it all together. I think a lot of times when we're in leadership, whether it be leadership of a family or an organization, we feel like we have to project this image that we have it all together,
yep.
and we don't have it all together. Nope. None of us have it all together.
Yeah, yeah.
And at different times, we're all going to be more of a mess than other times,
yeah.
you know? And
yeah.
so whether it feels like a significant mental health issue mm-hmm. or it feels like an area where you're just struggling,
mm-hmm.
there's space to let your guard down and
yeah.
really become the best version
of
yourself
yeah.
that you were created to be.
Yeah.
And I think if we could change the conversation where we were more vulnerable and we were talking about that, we would have more people who were the best versions of themselves that
yeah.
they were created to be.
Yeah. You say that, and what comes to mind is everybody always loves to quote Jesus when he says, you know, love the Lord your God with all your heart and love others as you love yourself. And I always think, well, that's the reason why everybody sucks, because they don't love themselves. Like, if you don't love yourself,
right.
I can't love anybody
else.
That's
a great point.
It's conditional.
It's a great point. I always talk to clients about, you know, on the airplanes back when we could fly, they always
right.
said, you know, put on your oxygen mask first.
Yes,
if we are not taking care of ourselves,
right.
if we're not emptying out our stress buckets
right.
and filling it up with good stuff, we don't have anything to offer
mm-hmm.
to other people.
Yeah.
And so it feels, I think, especially in the South, there's a sense of like, if I take care of myself first,
mm-hmm.
it's real selfish.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I shouldn't do that.
Yeah, you're taught. It's like, oh, make sure you take care of your neighbor. Be
yeah.
careful. You know, yeah.
Yeah.
No,
and I think it's the most selfless thing we can do to take
yeah.
care of ourselves first so that we have an abundance to give
to everybody else.
Yeah.
Yep. No, that's so true. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad that you were able to join us today and just give us really practical, you know, help and handles to know
yeah.
where to grab and where to go and where to start. And so I just, yeah, on behalf of everybody at Decatur City, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. This has also been so great to have you guys with us today. And thank you guys for joining us, but also journeying with us through this topic the last couple of weeks. If you, as you were watching, you were listening and you felt like, maybe that's me, you know, I may need to take some steps to work on my mental health, we would love to walk with you through that. If you go to DecaturCity.org, /care. We have all kinds of resources for you, some emotional health resources, even a way to get connected with great professionals like Wendy and counselors in our area. Please, please reach out to us if there's anything that we can do. And as Tinsley said, each and every one of you is a valuable part of our community. You are not alone, and we want to be there for you if you're struggling. And we hope that you have a great week. And we'll see you next time at Decatur City Church Online.
Thanks so much for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed hearing a little more of Wendy and Sharita's conversation. Like Sharita said, we are here for you if you need help. Please visit DecaturCity.org/care to find helpful resources, including ways to get in touch with great local counselors. We hope you have an incredible week, and we'll be back soon.